You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Robert W. Krajenke. Robert Krajenke is a spiritual counselor and active ordained minister of the Fellowship of the Inner Light, a non-denominational interfaith church based in Virginia Beach. His latest ARE Press book, Edgar Cayce's Story of the Bible, formerly published as a trilogy, is sure to be considered the definitive book of the Cayce readings about the Bible. His published works include Spiritual Power, Healing Hands, co-authored with the British healer Malcolm Smith, and a book of his poetry, For the Beloved, Poetry for the Mystic Heart. He is a regular speaker for the Virginia Beach Headquarters Free Daily Survey Lectures.
Thanks for coming on the show today.
Well, my pleasure, and I enjoy the opportunity to share the material.
I noticed from a biography I was reading of you, you knew Gladys Davis.
Oh, yeah. She was a very important person for me. I consider her my spiritual mother. She was a wonderful person.
What was it that inspired you about her?
She is a manifestation of where the readings, you know, living the readings, the principles in the readings, where it will take you. And she was just like, just love. She was just living love and a grounded person. And that's what I remember about her and think about her was, oh, if this is how you, if this, you can follow this material and you end up this way, I want to know more about it. Because when I met Gladys, my life was kind of in a crisis stage with a divorce and lots of stuff going on. And this was a lot of new information. I mean, I had no background in the metaphysics and stuff like that. So it was just all a big learning experience, and I was so blessed to have her more or less be a kind of a guide, you know, if you want.
So this was your introduction to the material about Edgar Cayce? Was that through Gladys Davis?
No, not really. We were starting a little business in Virginia Beach at this time. This was in the 60s. A bunch of us hippies seemed to be drawn to Virginia Beach for various reasons. And one of the group was Gladys's nephew, T.J. Davis. And we were remodeling this former barbershop to be kind of a leather store in California-style clothes. And Gladys came in to want to see what her nephew was doing. And when she came in, there was a light around her that was just, I'll never forget it. And so she met everybody and so on. Then she invited everybody who would like to come over and drop in on it any time. And I thought everybody would go, but I was the only one. And that was the start of having Sunday dinner and watching TV together, Ironsides and Perry Mason were two of their favorite shows, she and her husband Al. So it was just, for me, it was very healing. I think it was a gift of God to be in that little household with those two people and have that experience. Certainly oriented my life to what was the most important values.
Could you tell us about your book, Edgar Cayce's Story of the Bible?
Well, Gladys has a role in that, too, in that when I was meeting her and I had a little part-time job at ARE Press and I would have my lunch with her and her husband Al. They would come and they were working on a project for a friend which was this lady, I've gone a blank on her name right now, but she had a friend who was a friend of Edgar Cayce's. They were good buddies. They had a similar backgrounds in the sense of not much formal education he was a tugboat captain on the Elizabeth River, and they had a love of the Bible. Well, when Edgar died before he did, and then this lady, I wish I could remember her name, they became good friends, and his name was Noah Miller, and when he was on his deathbed, he made Dorothy Gray, I think, maybe, to promise he would get his little manuscript published by ARE Press. And what his manuscript was, and she had consented to do that, and his manuscript consisted of really a simple, folksy, direct telling of the story from Abraham to the dispersion of the tribes, or the period where the lost tribes come in. And up to that point, it was no interpretation, it was no anything, just straightforward in his folksy narrative there. But when he got to the lost tribes, he had, in the last few years of his life, got interested in what was the British Israel Survey, where they try to trace where the lost tribes went, and especially the royal tribe, because and the tribe of Judah, because those were the promises of the royalty and the such and such. So she promised, and then when she submitted it to the ARE Press, they couldn't use it because, one, it wasn't anything about the KC readings. And so she got, you know, rejected, and she was good friends with Gladys and Al, so she came to them, and they, the loving beings that they were, tried to see if they could salvage this manuscript by going to the library and going through, and this is before computers, so this is all going through the card catalog, you know, with your fingers, trying, looking up the numbers and such. And they were starting to extract the readings that had Old Testament incarnations in it. And their idea was if they could just cut in a few of the Casey excerpts, that might salvage the manuscript. Well, that's where I came in. And they were right at the point where they were saying, this is eating up too much of our time. This isn't the purpose. Especially Gladys, that this wasn't her purpose for the reading. She had to use her time and energy for her mission in life, which was to catalog and so on, get the readings out. Hmm. So they asked me if I would take it over. And I was, of course, just really enthusiastic. I was learning all this new stuff from the readings. That was life-changing. And so I took it on, and and then as I started working with the gathering the Casey material, the incarnations and such, and Casey's commentaries on Bible and such, I said, oh, this material needs to be a book of its own. It can't just be patched into this that was never intended for it. And then I had to tell the lady that, I'm sorry. And I knew she was very upset, but when the books finally came out in 1971, the first of the three volumes, and she saw what it was, she said, oh, Noah will be happy that this was the result of the work. So everybody ended up in a good space with it.
How did you do the research? Did you go through all the readings looking for those specific readings that applied?
Well, Gladys, in her thoroughness, she had copied down the numbers of all the readings on several pieces of paper and columns. And so, as a matter of going through the numbers, she had already, written down, and then pulling out what seemed appropriate material for the book. But as the book evolved in my mind that this has to be a Casey story of the Bible, it's, from just the development of his philosophy and his outlook was so phenomenal. First was to get all the readings out, all the readings that had Old Testament stuff in it, and then to choose which ones seemed appropriate. But as I went through it, I thought every one of them was. So it was a matter then of arranging with the chronology of the story of the Bible, you know, as the story unfolds, following that. And then Gladys remembered and brought out the minutes from Edgar Casey's Bible class. Now, Casey read the Bible cover to cover every year of his life. And he always taught a Sunday school class ever since he was a young man. He always had that, no matter what city he lived in or where he moved. He kept up that practice.
We'll be right back with more with Robert Krajenke on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Robert Krajenke.
When he was teaching or having his class in a church, like a host church, he wouldn't teach anything about that would be contradictory to what that church might believe, like reincarnation, astrology, and planetary influences and things like that. So in the last two, what turned out to be the last 2 years of his life, his study group in Virginia Beach in Norfolk wanted him to teach where he could be, uninhibited and tell it the way he understood it. So he taught in his house. And then they kept minutes, and he was conscious. He wasn't being in a trance state. This was his conscious, understanding and such. So Gladys remembered those minutes because Casey died before he wanted to see him before they got circulated. But then the war broke out, and so many requests for readings were coming in and coming in. And he was doing 8 and 9 and 10 readings a day and such, where the source told him he should only be doing 2. And so he never got to review those minutes, and they got put away in the vault. And then Gladys remembered those, and that made the book. So, because with the Bible class minutes, you had a story from from Genesis to the birth of Jesus and beyond. So that made a continuous narrative, because there wasn't always incarnations or, Casey trance material to fit every phase of the Bible, every phase of the story. So the Bible class minutes, in addition to getting his insights, helped fill in the blanks, so it was a continuous narrative from Casey's perspective, either unconscious in the trance state or as a Sunday school Bible class teacher to his Search for God group. That's how it got put together. And that project was just changed my life so much in the depth of the wisdom and the whole reorientation to what the Bible was, because I never really was much of a Bible person. I was raised Catholic, and I kind of didn't relate to it very much, and so I always say about the sixth grade I stopped being practicing Catholic, except when they had the novenas, the 9-day novenas, I found myself drawn to make the novena, which meant going on the weekends too, because in a Catholic school, you went Monday through Friday to the novena. But not too many kids went on the weekend, but I did. So that was kind of mysterious to me, what that was all about. And then when I got to college, they had a Bible as literature course, and I thought, well, let's take that. And I felt kind of drawn to it. But after 2 or 3 weeks, again, I was wondering, what am I doing here? And I dropped out of the class. And up until Edgar Cayce. That was my extent of Bible reading. But I heard, the first time I heard a lecture or presentation on Edgar Cayce's story of the incarnations of Jesus, the incarnations that led to his development as the Christ. That was so, that just struck in my soul like a lightning flash entered when that story was being told. And so I wanted to know more and more. And then the opportunity to work with the Bible Project, the book project, came in. And so it was just a natural kind of, I think, arranged by the forces up above.
Now, you have written a trilogy here, or put together a trilogy. What made you divide the parts into the parts you divided it?
That's a good story. I was working on this manuscript, and Jeff Stern's book came out, The Sleeping Prophet. And so all the publishers from New York were coming down looking for Cayce material, and nobody really had a book. Now, I had this project. I was well along into it, so Bantam Books had made a good offer. So we signed a contract for X number of words, and okay. So as I've worked with the material and developed with the material, I reached the word count, and I was only up to the death of Moses. So I negotiated with them again because they were kind of stuck now because they had committed to this project. And so we signed another contract with another word count I forget how many words it was, of course, it's a long time ago. And then I got up only to Solomon. So there was still another book left. So they were published three individual books by Bantam Books originally. And then Bantam dropped it ultimately, and ARE picked it up, and it stayed in print for about 35 years. And then a few years back, they dropped it. And then through one of the major donors, the ARE, received the trilogy, which is now out of print. But they, you know, they had extra copies. So they, for a generous donation, they will always send a gift back, especially if the person's like a life member, like this fellow was, Richard Copeland in Florida. And he got fascinated with the trilogy, and he made a donation to get them printed a certain number of copies, but to be used exclusively for the prison program, ARE's prison program. When the prisoner writes a letter and requests a book, or just writes a letter, they might send a book back. So they were using the trilogy, or volumes from the trilogy, in the prison program like that. Well, eventually those books ran out, and then there was a quiet period, and then I volunteer at the ARE on Monday and Wednesday in the call center. But it's 9 months ago or so, Kevin Tedeschi, the CEO of ARE, came into the call center and said, "My book is going to be reprinted. Richard Copeland made another donation, but this time they're going to be three volumes in one. So it's going to be one big Bible thick edition."
Yeah.
So that's how that came in. Two donations by the same man with a great love for the Cayce material. Because up to then, up till he received that gift, from the member services department, he was very orthodox in his Bible teaching. He taught a Sunday school class at his church. But when he got that, I don't know how it changed his Sunday school class at his church, but it sure opened up an interest for him. I have yet to meet him. I haven't met him yet. But
I was wondering about specific stories and how Edgar Cayce approached those. How did he approach Noah's flood?
Well, it works on several levels. Because he said you can interpret the Bible on any of three levels, but whatever level you choose, you have to be consistent with it, and you have to make sure that it interrelates with the other two. So you just can't go way off on the tangent. So part of the Noah's flood story has to do with the very early periods when souls are... See, Cayce said we were created in a spirit... We were first spiritual beings in a spiritual world, and that the earth itself was not created to be a habitation for man. It was just simply an expression of God, of God's creativity, creative force. And so the spiritual beings were, the divine, they were supposed to stay in the celestial realm. But being given free will and being in the image of God, which is creative energy with consciousness and a will, they began to, according to their readings, began to exercise our will and create by psychic projection, because we weren't physical, it was just like, you'd say, mental projection, and creating thought forms. And ultimately we got so enamored with our thought forms, we lost the connection to the in consciousness to the source, and we began to think we were or experience ourselves as we're the creators. And part of that, part of those beings who were projecting into the earth as it evolved over the eons and interfering with somewhat with evolution and projecting thought forms and experiencing like what it's like to be in an animal body and changing some of the original like divine structures. So we get things like the centaurs and the satyrs and monsters and things like that. Cayce, all that stuff from that we find in early folklore and mythologies and fairy tales is almost, it is a record in a way of this early period when we weren't so knit, so dense in matter. We were still more like energy beings.
We'll be right back with more with Robert Krajenke on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Robert Krajenke.
As we kept playing around like this, our bodies got a slower vibration and hard, grew more hard, grew dense, and ultimately separated. So there was a lot of wild stuff going on, and ultimately, make a long story short, it brought on, Cayce says, the reason that Adam came, he came as a direct projection of the divine. He didn't come as a thought form. And his purpose, his reason for coming was to find a way to help those trapped souls remember who they were. And so he looked at the nature and animal forms and such and evolved like the body for these spiritual beings who are now in physical because are in their thought forms. And the reason then, this is pretty heavy stuff to follow, but it's the only way and the reason that, so even Adam, he, with his companion Eve, we know the story about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the serpent and so on. So Adam made a choice that separated him. And then he had to awaken up again to who he was. But there was a purpose behind this, apparently, that there first had to be like a physical, a perfect, ideal body for the soul to evolve in, to have a chance to evolve. The thought forms were wiped out at the time of the flood of Noah, Casey says, of Noah. So there was no more of an option to project into the earth as a thought form. You had to take on the body. And the reason for that was, as a thought form, you can stay in that state of consciousness forever, because thought will go on and on and on. But a body has a beginning and an ending, so the soul will know the pain of separation and also have an opportunity to review its life and experience to see and try to understand what it needs to do to continue evolving. So death became necessary in that way, according to the readings. So that's a very brief story of Noah. Also in the reading, see, there were a dairy farmer in New Hampshire and his wife and the maid to his, you know, like the for his wife and their child. They were a soul group, and Casey said the man had been Noah. And his present wife had been, I think, his wife in the ark. And the maid, the nurse, she had been the mother of Noah's wife in the ark. And it goes on. So there's more of a literal basis to the Bible story through these readings. But there's also, you know, metaphysical teachings and lessons, and Casey's, one of his statements is mind is the builder. So the Bible can be read as literal or as kind of history, and metaphorically or symbolically, and it's through the symbols in the mind that we gain the real understanding and meaning of what this book is for and about. And then spiritually, that's where you go beyond mind and you make that direct connection with Creator, and you're in the now. So those are the three levels that you can work on with the Bible.
In your second part of your trilogy, I was noticing my wife and I read the Bible most days. Right now we're in Judges. Now, I noticed that you have a chapter on the Book of Judges. What does Edgar Casey say about that?
He has, here's something to bear in mind as we talk about this. Casey, starting with Abraham, first let me say, Casey says the spiritual meaning of the word Israel means seeker after truth. And truth, he defined in one of his Search for God readings, is truth is any experience you have that awakens an awareness of the divine within. And Abraham, you know, we know the story of Abraham. He heard a voice and it told him to separate away from all that was known and familiar and take this journey. Well, Casey said the meaning of Abraham's name spiritually is the call. Like when you feel a call towards something, it's not coming from your mind or something, but it's like coming from your heart or your soul. And you begin to follow that to the best of your ability at any, you know, given your, we don't start out perfect with this. We still have our negative things and stuff like that we have to work with. So the Book of Judges, is after they're in the Promised Land, they have this tradition now of, from Abraham on, of responding in the moment. We don't have a priesthood yet or, clergy or anything. So in the Judges, if there's a threat of invaders, a threat of being invaded, well, the person who the spirit would fall on, and there's a story about one fellow, he's plowing the field, and the spirit comes on him, and he rallies up, you know, the tribes, and then they fight off the threat. And it's not all the tribes always. It's just those who responded or those who are enough. And then he goes back to plowing his fields. So that's where we're learning, you know, in terms of this mental development to trust. And then we get to the later where they want to be like all the other nations that have kings and such. So they want to pattern themselves on something outside of their development. But in Samuel, the great prophet of this period, is not pleased with this, but he goes along with it anyway. And then you have all the troubles and the strengths, too, that come from getting organized. And that leads to Solomon then is the height of material glory and the wisdom, but he still is not purely faithful to what his commission was, because he was supposed to have no other gods before him, but just keeping this connection clear. But he has all these marriages with other kings for political gain and favor and wealth and stuff like that. So in the end, that becomes the downfall of Israel, all these entangling alliances that he's made, and it causes the 10 tribes to separate and form the separate nation of Israel. So we're learning, I always quote this in the lecture, we climb the ladder of success, Robert Bly said, and then we might find we put the ladder against the wrong wall. And so Solomon was very successful materially, but it brought about the collapse of the kingdom. From then on, from after Solomon, then there's good kings and there's bad kings, and it goes on, and ultimately they get the 10 tribes get carried away into captivity, the lost tribes, and then shortly after that, Nebuchadnezzar comes, the Babylonian Empire, and conquers Judah and carries them away and destroys the temple and the city and all that stuff. So we see what happens when we purely trust in material things. And then we have the rise of the prophets, and that's the last part where you're like at the third level of, we're talking about the three levels you can approach the Bible on. Well, this would be where the prophets are now speaking and telling them trying to get the people to rebuild, go back to this hostile area, like today's hostile, and rebuild the holy city, rebuild the temple. And they have all these obstacles. So that's the last part. You're rebuilding your soul, so to speak, after your many experiences in the earth, and where at some part in our journey we have, like the prodigal son, we've spent our riches, we laid down with the pigs, and finally we get to a point where we want to go home, where we were fed and taken care of and loved, and so the prodigal son returns. And that's sort of the Bible story too, in a way. The big when you break it down that way.
We'll be right back with more with Robert Krajenke on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Robert Krajenke.
When it comes to the wars in the Old Testament, I mean, there's a good amount of war spoken of. I was just wondering if Edgar Cayce talked about the purpose in general of the wars fought, or was it different for each situation?
Let's see.
I guess that might be too general of a question. It might be fact specific, to each different section.
Well, the leaders of Israel weren't all saints by any means, the kings and such, and they fought a lot of them, you know, there was a lot of motivation for material glory and conquest and fame and power. But there always was this tradition, you know, and this purpose that was built into what they did. And they would get away from it, and then some event would happen or some calamity would come, and they'd start praying again for a deliverer and so on. So they keep coming back. And it's, again, it's like us in our lives. We can get so far away from materialism and our own ambitions and search for popularity, gain, and glory, and whatever. And then forget our spiritual purpose and don't nurture that God connection within us. And so we have a calamity of some kind, and then we start going to therapy and things like that, trying to figure out what went wrong. Or we come to somebody like Casey, and it just wows you that this is the truth, and you're on your spiritual path and more conscious of it. That's how I look at it. And that's,
so then,
that was my experience.
It's like a metaphor for spiritual development. It's like a cycle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And see, we're repeating the cycle even to today. It's like the Bible isn't past history. It's being lived today. We're going through it all in our country now. It's like every time we have a rise of empire, it follows the same patterns. You get toward the end. It's like heavy taxation, a favored ultra-rich minority which puts the burdens on the majority. You become dependent on war and military. And it just, you see it happening over and over again. You look at France and England and go all the way back, and you'll find the same pattern pretty much. Because we're not, it's only when we are consciously and dedicated searching for truth, that which awakens the awareness of the divine within us. Other than that, we're rationalizing, justifying, blaming, you know, as we see, you know, in the public arena here. Especially
oh, yes.
With this political season.
Mm-hmm. We get into fights and don't look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, you're not elevating your consciousness. You're just trying to get into power. And that's, you know, if you know about the chakras, that's all for lower chakra stuff. Casey wants us to get up into the three higher, you know, the thyroid, pineal, and pituitary, into the oneness and the peace and harmony and, you know, all that.
We're about out of time. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Oh, yeah. What Casey says is that this Bible, Casey's Bible, is kind of universal, and because he said it's a book about the seeker. And if you're seeking, even if you're not seeking, actually, and read the Bible, you're going to find some circumstance in your life that is matched in the Bible, because it's a book about life with all the good and all the bad, nothing hidden to present a false picture, he said. So the Bible is about us and our lives and our journeys, and it can be a map if you're a seeker, and there's no dogma, or Casey wasn't big on dogma, rules and rituals and all that stuff. It was to find yourself, find your connection. And for him, the Bible worked really well and enabled him to make this great contribution to humanity for this time when it's people seeking more than probably any, you know, recent time.
Wow.
We have a whole new journey. Yeah.
Well, thank you for all this information, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, I thank you for inviting me and giving me an opportunity to do this.
Well, it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose, who works with the ARE and wrote the book Wake Up Your Intuition, and also teaches the class based on that book. Hi.
Good morning. I love this reading. It's very simple and it's very to the point. That's something that we could all bring into our lives as a really true vibration. It's 24-28-1. For this, the ideal as it is set should not be not as to what others should do to make the ideal situation for self, but as to how self may apply itself in its ideal to bring the ideal relationships with others.
Well, what does that mean to you?
Personal responsibility. And the example I would love to use is that we blame others. They're not doing this for us. And so my life isn't fulfilled. So it's constant looking outside and not being in your spirit. Even down to, I hear, if the president or if this person would just do more, it has to start on an individual basis. And when it starts on an individual basis, then truth can be felt in a place that's collective by others.
Ah, yes, this speaks of the ideal, which is something I know Casey talks about, and I guess the importance of not approaching it so that you're creating this ideal situation for yourself, but you're addressing your relationships with others. So it's another reading that talks about reaching out to others as part of society.
Yes.
Wow, well, thanks for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Robert Krajenke for talking to us. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day. And most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.